Get ready. Get set. Because you're listening to the all-new Macquarie Sunday Sessions. Right here on 2SER 107.3.
I'm Ben and you're listening to Macquarie Sunday Sessions, a Macquarie student takeover of 2SER. And in the next 45 minutes, we have the final part of the story about William McDonald, considered to be Australia's first known serial killer. We take a look on how bubble tea has become a pop culture phenomenon here in Sydney, and we look into an issue that affects counselling professionals. But before all that, let's listen to some music. You're listening to 2SER 107.3.
My sister sees through me. I sleep too much. Nothing seems to thrill me. Am I losing touch? Is this the way it goes? Is this the way it goes? And I drink too much coffee. I've been spending my money to have things to hold. But baby, I'm not sure. Baby, I'm not sure. And I'm running out of things to say.
That was I'm Not Sold by Talia Carroll, released earlier this year. You're listening to Macquarie Sunday Sessions on 2SER. And coming up shortly, we find out what happened to William McDonald that led to his capture and about his time in prison.
Radio with a book.
Brainwave. Underground radio. Real radio.
Brainwave.
Stories,
ideas,
and
radio.
40 years of 2SER.
front seat in our backyard. Always wished I'd live to see you let your guard down. Wished I'd do the same. Maybe some things don't get easier, they just change. Don't want a simple explanation anyway.
That was Never Changed by Snowy Band. William McDonald was a serial killer in the early 60s, and previously I covered his early life and his crimes. Now, take a listen to what happened during his trial and his life in prison.
William McDonald was a serial killer in the early 60s here in Australia. He attacked and killed four men in Sydney and one in Brisbane, the victims being Alfred Greenfield, William Cobbin, Frank McLean, Patrick Hackett and Amos Hertz. After his last murder in Sydney, the police mistook the body as McDonald but eventually he was spotted by an old friend, and this is when the police knew that McDonald was the Sydney Mutilator. All my information came from Murderpedia.com, the book Never To Be Released by Paul B. Kidd, and the article Death of a Serial Killer by Kim Arlington. So after finding out that he was mistaken for the dead body discovered in Sydney, McDonald fled to Melbourne. He dyed his hair and he grew his moustache and tried to hide. But after the article Case of the Walking Corpse explaining that he was alive, plus his photo being published, his new workmates were onto him. And when he asked for pay for only 3 days of work, the police caught him and took him in for questioning. After being sent back to Sydney, McDonald admitted to his crimes and said he was taking out revenge for the trauma of his childhood. With these confessions, he was charged with 4 counts of murder. In September of 1963, his trial began. McDonald pleaded not guilty on the grounds of insanity. At the time, his trial was one of the most sensationalised Australia had ever seen. During the trial and his recount of the crimes, a woman of the jury fainted. The rest of the jury and the mass crowd that was watching were all disgusted by what McDonald had done, but they lingered on every word that came out of his mouth. The jury only took a short time to find McDonald guilty on all 4 counts of murder. Something that was really interesting to the public is that the jury decided that McDonald was sane at the time of the murders. This was going against the public opinion that he was insane. Mr. Justice McLennan, before passing his sentence, said that it was the most barbaric case of murder and total disgrace for human life that had ever come before him in his many years on the bench. McDonald showed no signs of remorse and had made it very clear that he would kill again if he were free. With this, he was sentenced to life in prison. Not long after being put in prison, he was declared insane by a panel of doctors after almost killing another inmate. Because of this, he would spend the next 16 years in a psychiatric centre for the criminally insane on the Central Coast. In 1980, he was moved to Cessnock Prison and released back into mainstream prison society. He lived there in the protective custody section of the prison. And during his time there, he would become reclusive, reading a lot and listening to classical music. To everyone there, he was known as Old Bill. In 2000, in an interview with author Paul B. Kidd, McDonald, the man who terrified Sydney and one of the most feared serial killers, said without any irony, "It's terrible out there. People aren't even safe in their own homes." He had spent so much time locked up that he was convinced that freedom would kill him. In December of 2000, he declined to attend a court hearing set down to grant him a date when he would be eligible for parole. "I'm institutionalised now," he said. "I have no desire to go and live in the outside. I wouldn't last 5 minutes. I'm too old, and besides, I have everything I could ever want here, where I am." But while he had no desire to live outside the prison, McDonald didn't mind the occasional day trip, but what he saw he didn't particularly like. During the interview for the book Never To Be Released, when asked why he killed those men, he said, "I didn't murder those men. Physically, I did, there's no doubt about that. But it's the other person who lives inside me that actually killed them." He continued, "When I was reading about the murders in the paper the following day, it was as if it was all a dream. I knew that it was me that had done it, but it was if I hadn't done it, if you can follow what I mean. Then I would resume my normal life until the urge to kill the soldier came over me again, and then I'd go on the hunt." The soldier being the one that attacked him in his youth. McDonald was regarded as Australia's first serial killer. After 52 years behind bars, McDonald died on the 12th of May 2015 from natural causes. He was 90 years old, and at the time of his death, he was the oldest and longest serving prisoner in New South Wales.
That was my piece on William McDonald, Australia's longest serving prisoner. To catch up on parts 1 or 2, or even any of the other stories from previous weeks, you can head to 2scr.com. Now, time for some more music. You're listening to 2SER 107.3. That was I'm Really Trying by Disc. You're listening to 2SER 107.3. Coming up, we look into the phenomenon of bubble tea through the eyes of someone who works at a tea shop, and how it has its own identity and that it comes with its own complications. So stick around for that.
2SER.
Stories, ideas,
stories,
ideas,
107.3.
107.3.
How strange to see where I least expected to. At least you checked on me. How strange to regret you when I least remember to. Do you regret me? As sure as oxygen finds its way through my lungs, as sure as the rising sun will find its way above the horizon, sure as the time will come, I'm sure that the time will come. I tried to tell you I'm not sure how to.
And that was Oxygen by Annie Hamilton. Bubble tea is an incredible beverage with a unique look. It's made by blending a tea base with milk, fruit, or fruit juices. Bridget invited her friend Christine, who's been working in a milk tea shop for a couple years now, to talk about bubble tea culture here in Sydney.
Have you noticed that the Ellie, Coco, Gongcha, Royal Tea, these names are everywhere? These are just a few of many bubble tea shops in Sydney. According to the competition in the bubble tea market, these stores still have long queues on the streets and sells increasingly by the minute. Boba tea is a production of tea combined with milk, sugar, and a topping of tapioca balls. It explosively hit in China, and now, there it is in Sydney. Today, Christine talked about some interesting phenomenon she found when she's working at a milk tea shop for the last few years.
Why do you think bubble tea culture is becoming popular in Australia?
Well, based on the data shows of the place I work at, around 2,000 cups of bubble tea were sold per day. I have different types of bubble tea in our store that offer choices for people refer to their personal preferences. When I'm working, what I found interesting is that even though some customers are going to have questions about our specific products since they never tried it before, eventually they're going to try it and love it. For example, if people like something really sweet, they might order the brown sugar bubble milk tea. If people prefer a healthier drink, the mix for green tea would be the one they're looking for, and it's organic.
So what's your daily work in the milk tea shop?
It's an interesting question. So what I'm doing every day, I like cooking bubbles, making tea, and serving customers. Apparently, bubble tea is the signature in our store. Like, most of the customers request to add pearls into the drinks they order. It just tastes like jelly, but slightly different. You know, people are crazy about it. Then, as I said, I need to prepare different types of tea that includes green tea, oolong tea, and black tea. All can be the tea base for our drinks. All the time that I have been working in the milk tea shop, I was trying to find the reason why bubble tea attracts people so much. Now I can't really get the idea. Bubble tea is just a general name. It not only represents bubble tea. You can add bubbles to any drinks you want in our store. And the interesting thing is milk tea shops are always constantly updating drinks. For example, some of the drinks are seasonal only, and we always have special drinks during the special period, such as juicy peach ice squash, which is really popular in our store. I think that's because the drink is in pink color with the pink lid that do attract a lot of girls. I think this should also be the reason why milk tea shop have been so popular and haven't been out of date.
So what made you work at a milk tea shop?
Well, I'm fond of the bubble tea. To be honest, when I first arrived in Australia and saw Shorty, Chatham, Gongcha, I was surprised. I didn't expect there will be that much milk tea shops here, although bubble tea culture is already super hot in China. What I can see is there are bunches of different milk tea shops open in Sydney, and most of them are located near the schools, unis, or commercial streets. Like, I found two exactly the same milk tea shops but located on two spots in QVB. One of the reasons I think is that Sydney is a multicultural city. People have chances to try different things from different cultures. I'm one of them, and that's the reason I'm working here.
So before milk tea shop landed in Australia, people are more likely to have coffee or tea from cafe. I'm not saying that people are not having coffee anymore. What I mean is people are showing their curiosity and enthusiasm on Fango, that people are trying to take in something new from another culture.
That was Bridget talking to Christine about bubble tea culture here in Sydney. I'm Ben, and you're listening to Macquarie Sunday Sessions, a Macquarie student takeover of 2SCR 107.3. That was First Time by Becca Mankari. You're listening to Macquarie Sunday Sessions right here on 2SER 107.3. And make sure you stick around because we have an interesting story coming up about an issue which affects counselling professionals.
There is no welfare in Cambodia for vulnerable families facing this pandemic. Hundreds of them are relying on Cambodian Children's Trust. You can send urgent food and medical support for just $2 a month. If enough of us give a little, we can take action. Join us at COVID19Cambodia.org.
Coming up now on Macquarie Sunday Sessions, we have You Beauty by Dianas, right here on 2SER 107.3.
Thank you.
That was Keep the Faith by Overcoats. I'm Ben, and this is Macquarie Sunday Sessions on 2SCR 107.3. Now Thomas dives into an issue which affects counselling professionals' mental health and explores how this impacts them.
Listening to people's problems is hard. I know for me, it takes all my concentration to focus on what is being said and to think about how I might help them. It can be unpleasant, draining, and sometimes it makes it difficult to speak with that person again, as their problems seem never-ending. This can be an issue for counselling professionals who speak with clients all day, as it can wear on their mental well-being and puts them in a position where they're at risk of vicarious trauma. Catherine has been working as a counsellor for over 5 years and has been through training which educates about vicarious trauma and managing mental health. I spoke with Catherine about what vicarious trauma is and how it affects professionals.
So my definition is an emotional residue of exposure to someone else's trauma. It's that cumulative information that you're continually hearing about a client's trauma or more than one trauma. You're hearing their stories. So you're sitting with their pain, their fear, their terror. And if you're doing face-to-face work, you're actually witnessing it as well, based on the information that they're giving you. I think you've got to share that pain with your client. To some degree, you take on and feel what they are feeling.
Can you tell me how that affects a counsellor?
So for me, there's five sections of how that affects me as a counsellor or anyone else doing this sort of work. So you have the emotional effect, the behavioural, the physical, the spiritual effect, and the cognitive effect, but some are scarier. The behavioural ones are pretty significant. A counsellor that could isolate themselves, become avoidant of people and situations, not be able to separate their work life from their home life, taking on some risky behaviours that they've never taken on before, and that can be a pretty concerning one. So they're your behavioural things, the things that you physically might do.
Vicarious trauma can impact a professional's mental well-being significantly. I asked Catherine if she'd experienced vicarious trauma and how that felt.
If I'm honest and self-reflective, the answer to that would be yes. I don't think I've fallen completely down the rabbit hole in my career. The emotional section is probably what I can relate to the most. The sadness for someone else, the anger. I have remembered feeling really angry about things.
How do you go about looking after your mental health?
I paint. I'm very tactile. I find that I need to do something with my hands. It's completely different to the work that I might be doing during the day. And it's also non-verbal. So a lot of trauma work is listening to someone's story. So there's a lot of talking, whether tactile, there's no words involved. It's the opposite.
Catherine also attends clinical supervision. Clinical supervision can be an important place for counsellors to recognise when they may be experiencing vicarious trauma. I got in contact with a clinical supervisor, who I will not name due to privacy reasons. We spoke about how clinical supervision can be used as an important tool in recognising vicarious trauma.
Well, it's very difficult in the room because we are human. We have to acknowledge that we're human. It's recognising that that has actually happened. Nurturing yourself in that room, compartmentalising it and putting that aside, and then going back to being present in that room. In clinical supervision, it's not personal counselling. It's acknowledging that what actually occurred in that interaction. It talks about your professional skills.
How important do you think it is for professionals to look after their mental health?
Very important. If it's not, clients will pick up on that very, very quickly. When you're in an interaction with a client, 90% is non-verbal communication. So if a counsellor is fatigued, if they're not well themselves, they're not going to pick up on that 90% of communication. And they're not going to actually be able to be present in that room, and they're not going to contribute to that therapeutic relationship, and they're not going to be able to give to that session. And a client will walk out thinking, what just happened? And they won't come back. And you can actually do a lot of harm.
For the professionals, it's essential that they look after their mental health due to vicarious trauma. the professionals also need to do this for the sake of their clients, so that they can help them through their own personal issues. Sometimes, when problems start to become overwhelming, it's okay to take a break and seek support from your friends and family.
That was Thomas's piece on vicarious trauma. If you would like to find out more, check out the Blue Knot Foundation's webpage.
Macquarie Sunday Sessions.
2SER
That was Love Light by Natalie Slade. This is Macquarie Sunday Sessions, a Macquarie student takeover of 2SER 107.3. If you want to catch up on any of the stories, make sure you head to 2SER.com. I hope you're having a good evening, and make sure you stick around for more stories and even more music. Coming up now on Macquarie Sunday Sessions, we have You Beauty by Dianas, right here on 2SER 107.3.
Thank you.
I hope you're strapped in.
Welcome back, students.
Because you're listening to the all-new Macquarie Sunday Sessions, right here on 2SER.
107.3. Hi, and welcome to Macquarie Sunday Sessions. This is a student-run broadcast on 2SER 107.3. I'm Connor, and I'm excited for the program this evening. We've got some fun to get into. I'll be discussing the word that nicely sums up the year 2020 so far, and it's not coronavirus. Don't go anywhere, and I'll let you know what it is and why. Later, we'll be hearing Ali explore the world of irrational fears and phobias. We've also got Tammy, who will let you know about something you never thought would be called a superfood. Before any of that, though, new music. The follow-up to Arca's incredible self-titled album is finally coming, after over 3 years. Here's a new track from it. It's called Time.
It's Macquarie Sunday Sessions. Pretty good, right?
I told you before I wanted to discuss the word that is defining the current year. I'll give you a hint. It starts with an S. Sanitize? Sunday Sessions? $750 stimulus payment? Look, no, it's none of those, but let's get into it now.
I'll tell you the word of the year so far for 2020, Schadenfreude.
I feel like most people know the term Schadenfreude from a scene in The Simpsons. It's probably the second best German language joke in the show, the best obviously being Sideshow D-Butt D-Tattoo, but I digress. Schadenfreude, it's the joy derived from somebody else's suffering or misfortune. Now, suffering and misfortune are always headline topics in some way or another, but in a year literally defined by a deadly pandemic, we've gotten some new perspectives on how to respond to what others are going through, particularly those that we or they deem to be bad. I could start with an extreme example. Remember when it was reported that poster boy for most, but not all, of what is disgusting about Hollywood, Harvey Weinstein, had contracted the virus? I read a tweet that still reflects at least a decent portion of the public reaction. When will Harvey Weinstein die from corona? I want to plan my celebration party. Here's the thing. If you think people who are convicted of what he has been are terrible people, then he's objectively a terrible person. However, reading the lethality of a virus that's killed a third of a million people in the last few months does beg the question of where we draw the line. I mean, every time it looks like Trump has been exposed, there's an army of people crossing their fingers that he's caught it. That said, he just called it an honor that the US leads the world in cases, so he might not get it either way. Regardless, inwardly wishing things upon people doesn't necessarily do anything. It'd be a relatively easy thing to justify to yourself if you wanted to. So yeah, as I said, defining topic of 2020, the novel coronavirus. But in it a not too distant second, Tiger King, and also Zoom calls, both of which were pertinent to the next schadenfreudish anecdote I want to consider. One of the stars of Tiger King, Carol Baskin, was recently tricked into partaking in what she believed was a TV interview with Jimmy Fallon, over Zoom. In reality, she was pre-recorded phrases of Fallon played on a soundboard in a prank played by YouTubers Josh Peters and Archie Manners. That's as sinister as the prank got. No Tiger Queens were harmed any further in the experiment, but it was downright humiliating enough to cause one to wonder if she deserved it. Ask many Tigers or a nemesis Joe Exotic, they'll say yes. They'll say she murdered her ex-husband in 1997. There's not actually any evidence that he was murdered at all, though. So discounting that, the prank was basically just people taking pleasure in the humiliation of somebody that they are familiar with due to an already humiliating TV series. That'd probably kind of suck for her. But what about when Peters and Manners find a more verifiably reprehensible target for their prank? Try British political commentator and all-round rabble-rouser Katie Hopkins. I don't really want to repeat any of her ickiest statements, but she's made some really crucial statements when it comes to race. And regarding the criticism she's received because of it, she tweeted, "Racial profiling is a good thing. Call me racist. I don't care. It has lost all meaning." End tweet. Anyway, the prank basically went like this. Peters contacted Katie Hopkins on behalf of a fake free speech group and invited her to Prague, where they were to present her with an award for her promotion of free speech. The title of the award was an acronym that spelled out a C word, which is often used affectionately here in Australia, but perhaps not in this context. When Hopkins received the trophy, she spoke of how she's not used to winning awards and how she appreciated nice things being said about her for a change, while she was unknowingly standing in front of a screen displaying the C word in massive letters. Naturally, it went viral, and the internet took great pleasure in this over Hopkins, but it's hard to pinpoint what was actually accomplished. If anything, it reinforced her and her supporters' view that people that break the mold of quote-unquote political correctness are actively silenced by the preachers of tolerance. Ironically, given Hopkins' hatred of feminism, a great backlash from the public was centered upon their choice of a woman as the target, something she happens to share with the prankster's other major victim, Carol Baskin. And sure, this isn't exactly a huge sample size to suggest there's anything more than a coincidence, but they're being part of a group that is subject to prejudice, bring people on board to revel in the schadenfreude who have more issue with their gender than who they actually are. And in general, in a culture where we collectively find joy in the suffering of the ones we oppose, it's hardly outlandish to suggest that people are willing to take the opportunity of possibly valid negative sentiment towards somebody to justify their own cruelty. I know, if somebody wanted to find reasons to put me in front of a big cuss word, they probably could, and I'm sure that goes for most people. And that's not to make out like Katie Hopkins doesn't suck. She does, but a society that desperately needs villains is one that is going to leap at the chance of new ones, and wishing deadly illnesses on people is an awfully apt starting point for a villain's origin story.
Okay, more music coming up. Super keen for this one. It's 72 by Smokey Brights.
Thank you.
You're listening to Macquarie Sunday Sessions on 2SER 107.3. Don't forget to check out our website at 2SER.com for previous Macquarie Sunday Sessions or to catch up on other shows on 2SER. You can also follow our Twitter at 2SER to stay updated. Do you have any irrational phobias? Mine's hearing my recorded voice back. Hope I never have to face that one. Our reporter Ali had a conversation with someone with a very common phobia. Here it is.
Phobias are very common in the modern world. Irrational fears and phobias are the same thing. A phobia is an extreme fear of something that, when you really doesn't really pose that much of a danger or a threat to your everyday life. Common phobias include arachnophobia, the fear of spiders, claustrophobia, the fear of tight spaces, hydrophobia, the fear of water, and hemophobia, the fear of blood. Brianna has mysophobia, which is the fear of dirt and germs. Mysophobia is more commonly known as germophobia, and this can cause problems in her everyday life.
Multiple showers a day, I need everything clean before I can even think about everything. I can't start my day until I've sort of feel like I've got it under control.
COVID-19 has affected a lot of lives in very different ways. There has been a push for hand washing within the last couple of months that was surprising for some people. Brianna's experience is slightly different.
It's gotten worse and better in some ways. Everything seems cleaner, also dirtier at the same time. Increased cleanliness around me definitely helps, but the fact I'm not in control of that cleanliness, it doesn't help as much as you would expect.
During this time, facing your fear is a very common occurrence. I do it every time I have to go to work, but people with phobias often have a harder time taking that step. Sometimes doing just one thing outside of your comfort zone can help.
I wash my hands when outside. That helps me face my fear without the need to clean everything else down. I feel like if I've got clean hands, it's okay.
Having a good support system is helpful for everyone when getting through life. For most people, their support system is their family and friends. Support system can help with a lot of problems, but for Brianna, her family and friends help in a different way.
My family and friends often help me by reassuring me when I feel like things aren't clean and there's dirt around me, and they obviously help me clean up if I'm in a bit of a mood.
Judgment nowadays can be seen in a lot of places with the wide use of social media, and this judgment can be discouraging for many people. What do you want to say to people who judge for your fear?
The world is a very dirty place, a lot dirtier than you would realise. And so you need to keep things a lot cleaner, especially in times like now.
That was Ali. Coming up next from Melbourne, it's Nat Vaser with Holding On.
Keep driving on, when the light. Stories, ideas, music. 2SER 107.3.
You're listening to Macquarie Sunday Sessions on 2SER 107.3. There's still plenty to come from Macquarie Sunday Sessions, and don't forget to follow us on Twitter at 2SER. Now, you probably won't have heard this next track from the late Neil Young, but to call it new might be a stretch. He recorded it along with the rest of his album Homegrown back in 1974-75, and it was so close to being released in 75 that a cover was created for it, but it was shelved at the light. Well, now, 45 years later, is finally on its way. This song is called Try.
Darling, the door's open to my heart, and I've been hoping that you won't be the one to struggle with the key. We got lots of time to get together if we try. The waiting time is over. No man sees around the corner. Walk in the rain and coming home dry. There's something missing there. It's easier to care and try. And I try to wash my hands, and I try to make amends, and I try to count my friends.
Tree
on your radio,
2SER.com and digital radio.
You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/2SERFM. Find out what's happening. Now, I bet you've seen people add some weird and wonderful thing into their smoothies. It seems to be all the rage now. But have you ever heard of someone adding algae to their smoothie? Find out just how good this addition can be next with Tammy.
Like many of us, I am always into testing the latest trends when it comes to health foods. However, recently, I've come across a health food product that would not seem like your conventional snack. Algae. Now, I know what you're about to say. What, as in the slimy, seaweedy stuff at the bottom of lakes? And yes, you would be right. However, there is a type of algae called chlorella, a single-celled freshwater algae that is grabbing the attention of health food fanatics globally. But what's so good about chlorella? I had a chat with algae man himself, Colin McGregor, CEO of Biogenesis Australia, to find out more about this natural food. I began by asking Colin, how do we even consume chlorella?
Acrylic can come in a number of forms. One form is a powder form, which you can mix into water, smoothie, or with milk or tea or hot water and have it as a drink. We also make it in tablet form, so you can take it just straight as tablets. But you can also, because it's a powder, you can mix it to make flour or pasta or breads, or you can mix it into basically any food that you can. So it's very versatile.
How do you harvest the chlorella from start till finish?
So we grow our chlorella up in North Queensland. The temperature is just perfect for growing algae. It's around the 30 degree mark, which the algae tend to thrive. We use natural spring water, so it's very fresh, clear water, which the algae can grow in. We grow our algae in ponds. So the algae circulates through the ponds till it gets to what we call harvest density, where it's thick enough for us to harvest. So there's a few stages in the process. The first stage is through a machine called a centrifuge, which is like a big spin dryer in your washing machine. It gets most of the water out, the algae, so it comes out of the centrifuge like a green paste or a green sludge. We then pump it up into this thing called a spray dryer, which is similar machine they use to make milk powder. It takes a sort of a sludgy liquid and sprays it into a big hot vacuum, which when it comes out of that big vacuum at the bottom, it's a nice fine powder.
What's like the wildest thing you've mixed it into?
The craziest thing we've done with Corella is made an algae face mask. So you mix it with water and then put it on your face to make a face mask, and it really deeply cleanses the pores. It's the craziest, walking around with a very dark green face mask on.
It has got quite a lot of so-called good nutrients.
This is Dr. Henry Meisner, Research Director at TTD International Solutions, Professor in Therapeutic Research, Nutritionist and Environmental Scientist.
Initially, it has been taken and treated as a source of protein, which is a renewable source of protein, which in Europe after the Second World War was some sort of sensitive issue. So for many years, all the experiments, etc., they have been done in Indonesia. And later on, after the 80s, 90s, they moved that to Taiwan.
So then, how does someone like Colin get involved in chlorella?
Many years ago, I was a young engineer working for one of the major Australian airlines. You may recall in the early 2000s, the price of fuel really skyrocketed. So at the airline, we were looking for different fuel. And because algae is so rich in oil and grows so quickly, it's seen and is one of the really viable alternatives as a biofuel. So I eventually left to work for an algae biofuel company, would you believe? And we were just seeing this as such a valuable, nutritious gift from God that, you know, it seems to be burning it through the back end of an airplane.
What's so good about chlorella then?
Firstly, it's very, very high in protein. It's about 50% protein, and it's natural, highly digestible protein, so it's very much better for you to consume than soy or whey type proteins.
If we'll compare grams of chlorella against 100 grams of perfect protein, so that 100 grams of chlorella would cover 117% of the man's requirement for protein, daily requirement.
Our chlorella is also very high in omega-3 and omega-6, which you may know is why people take fish oil. In fact, the fish don't actually make omega-3. They get their omega-3 and omega-6 from eating algae. We're really taking the fish equation for fish oil. Our algae is also very high in natural magnesium, which is very much needed, and also very high in B12, which any of our vegetarian listeners will know that B12 is a very essential part of a vegan's diet.
If you are vegan or vegetarian, in this case, I'd recommend take every day. Chlorella is one of those rare plant species which is a really good source of vitamin B12. And this vitamin B12 in combination with iron and folate, it's indication that during pregnancy it reduces high blood pressure. Chlorella is being praised for its action in protecting against dementia. It's good to take, okay, during the period, you know, that you are down after some illness, during illness, in terms of muscles, removing inflammation or inflammatory effect.
So what does the future of chlorella look like?
NASA are actually doing a lot of research on it because it can basically sustain human life. So they're looking to use it as a food for astronauts or civilizations on Mars or other planets. It's a very, very nutritious, very exciting plant to be dealing with. I could talk all day about chlorella. It seems to be good for everything. You may have seen algae in your swimming pool. It's the fastest growing plant matter on the planet. So it grows 40 to 100 times faster than any other plant on the planet. So we see algae as has to be part of the food solution for the human race. As the populations increase and available land diminishes as we get high populations. So especially as it is a natural superfood, high in protein, which is what humans need to live, we see algae as a food solution for the planet.
That was Tammy. Up next is Woods with Fell So Hard.
Last night, you fell so hard, so hard. 2SER.com. We can communicate.
You just heard Kikugaku Moyo with Ouchie Time on Macquarie Sunday Sessions. They're a psychedelic band from Japan who are making serious this year. They had a single pressed by the iconic Sub Pop, the same label that gave debuts to Fleet Foxes, Father John Misty, and of course Nirvana. Well, that's all tonight from me, Connor, but stay tuned into 2SER for more straight tunes. Before I wrap up though, I've got one more track to spin for you. It's called When the Sky is Grey by the Orb Weavers. Stay safe.
When the sky is grey, sometimes I prefer it than when it's blue. You might think it's strange. Sleep for its engines.
is walking away across the earth, east to the west. I remember, don't worry now.
Should live.